Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get across is that this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode's topic is Clown Faces. Clown Faces is a story published in an anthology called Things You Can Create that was released in January of 2013. It's a story of two young women who meet up at Clown College, Ara Bologna and Shanaran. The story charts their course from arriving at school and their first night hanging out at a bar, meeting some clown boys, to Ara Bologna getting jealous and lashing out. Ultimately, she ends up doing pretty poorly on her midterm performance because she puts herself at risk, and she drops out of school to join a rogue circus. From there, Ara Bologna cultivates ideas about murdering people and ultimately returns to sabotage her friend's end-of-the-year performance. Shanaran is supposed to perform a comedy routine with her boyfriend Galufis, in which she would spray water in his face with a flower right before she goes on stage, though. Ara Bologna hints that she may have replaced the water with hydrochloric acid, so she should perform at her own risk. The idea for this story first came to me through my work when I was in Baltimore. I was in an office where we had a birthday party planning committee. Sounds like something right out of The Office, the meaning of the Steve Carell show when I say that. So anyway, we had this committee. It was a little bit silly, but it was a good thing for office morale at the time. So we always came up with these themes, you know, and they were kind of like dance themes, essentially, in, you know, a high school setting, you know, things under the sea, and, you know, there were holiday-themed ones, and so on and so forth. So the idea came up one time, because we were a little bit stumped for good ideas and looking to do something a little bit more creative, that we would do this sort of word salad kind of brainstorming game. So we each wrote down a random noun, the more outlandish the better, and then we each wrote down some sort of event. You know, so for example, you take one from each of those hats, you can end up with a robot bar mitzvah, or you can end up with, you know, a ninja safari. So one of the things we came up with was a clown prom. And that one stuck with me. For whatever reason, as outlandish, as kind of random as that it was, that one, for whatever reason, kind of planted in my mind as something like, that would be kind of interesting. Because, you know, there are clown schools, and obviously they're not really, you know, formal institutions necessarily, in most cases, but, there are these clown schools, clown colleges, and, you know, it seems to make sense. They would have a prom like any other school. So I started working on this story from there. It's a story that I ended up bringing in for a workshop while I was at my MA program at Johns Hopkins, and it ultimately became part of my thesis project for that program. So I went through, you know, a decent number of revisions throughout that process. I envisioned this as a story that would culminate in a clown prom, and I sort of worked backward from there. Ultimately, one of the struggles I came up with out of that, though, was that the story just grew way too big for short story frame. You know, it's the kind of story where you have this end point in mind, you have kind of a beginning point in mind, and if you're going to traverse that distance, ultimately it's going to be, you know, a novella, if not a full-fledged novel, and that's not really what I was looking to write at the time. So there ended up being a lot of paring away, and finally it never actually even reached the clown prom that it started with. So I had a scene in there in the first iteration of it where the characters visit Ara Bologna's family, and it kind of revealed a little bit of kind of her upbringing and that she was coming from a pretty affluent family, but also not the most supportive family. And the idea was that this was a hint at her origin story and kind of where she had come from. And over that visit, it's, you know, a little boy's birthday party is kind of the premise for getting the characters over there, and they're going to perform as clowns, and, you know, they need kind of these performance credits so that all works out for them. But the gist of it was going to be that a little boy goes into the pool and almost drowns, and then Shanaran saves him. And that was going to deepen the conflict between these characters, because obviously Shanaran has done the right thing and a good thing and a thing that required special skills. But it's another thing that makes her look better than Arabellonia, and that's what doesn't sit very well with her. So I ended up cutting that scene. It was a really long scene. I ultimately decided this wasn't a story that was going to contain things that happened in the real world. This was going to be very centered on the community of this clown college, and then there was one additional scene that I ended up writing, which was based on a rogue circus. So the idea was that Arabellonia drops out of Clown College and goes away with this circus that's run down and not very well regulated, not really in compliance with all the rules it's supposed to be following. And it's sort of a dangerous circus where people aren't going to stop Arabellonia from doing a dangerous act necessarily. So this ended up being kind of the most fruitful piece of the story. I kind of tapped really into the overarching voice. I ended up kind of expanding to the rest of the story. And this ended up being something that I used for my reading. At the end of the MA program, we had this event where all the graduates would get together and read for, each other and friends and family and whoever came from the community at that point. And as a little bit of a sidebar, we had a thesis class. So, there was the thesis project that we worked on with an advisor, and it was kind of one-on-one mentoring relationship. But on top of that, we also had a class where all the graduating students met up, and we talked about a bunch of odds and ends, and touched a little bit on publication and things like that. But one of the things we did was we practiced reading the things that we were going to read in this reading. So I read mine, thought I read it reasonably well. It was understood that it wasn't supposed to be polished at that point. I went really early in the term, and the idea being just kind of for everyone to hear what I was thinking of reading and kind of make any notes about the way that I read it, or if they thought it was a good piece for the reading. Get the timing right, make sure I wasn't going way over. And the thing I was surprised with was I ended up getting a lot of feedback that had very little to do with the parameters of what we talked about, and it was more about you got to make more eye contact. You're really just literally reading the piece, and my response was sort of, well, yeah, I haven't really practiced it all yet. I was bringing this in to see if this was going to be the thing I would read. People who know me, in public, I'm not going to, show that I'm frustrated. I'm a good sport about these sorts of things. I didn't kind of argue any of the points. But inside, I was stewing a little bit, kind of that point of, no one's going to tell me that I'm not giving, a good enough reading, or that I need to change up, how I deliver a speech or anything like that, unless it's legitimate criticism, because it's the final, kind of final version of it that's more polished and more rehearsed. So anyway, I ended up, using a different piece, this rogue circus piece that I wrote during the revisions. And so I changed that up. Once I'd settled on what I actually was going to be reading, and I timed it pretty carefully, I started practicing every night in front of a mirror. It's one of the things I haven't really talked about to many people. It's definitely a little bit excessive for, the stakes of this, if this reading. It was definitely a very supportive, non-judgmental crowd. It wasn't as though I was defending it as a thesis. I was just kind of sharing a little bit of my work. I probably took it a little too seriously, but by the same token, I wanted it to be kind of perfect. And I actually kind of scaled up a little bit. I thought about, I'm going to make this memorable. There was a point where I was going to play some circus music kind of going in, and then, kind of do a little bit of a ringmaster spiel, before I transitioned into reading my piece. I ultimately decided that was a little bit too much. First of all, it was still a somewhat formal event. It was definitely a festive atmosphere, but, seemed a little bit, kind of outside of what this event was meant to be. But even more so, I started thinking about, well, what if the music doesn't work quite right? Or what if I get kind of nervous or kind of flub my lines during this ringmaster piece? And decided I was going to play a little bit more conservatively. So the other thing I did do was, I did order a couple clown noses, over the internet. They were surprisingly cheap and accessible. So I got one, legitimate rubber one that kind of wrapped around with a string, and one foam one, that just sort of, opened up, you're able to put it over your nose. So the foam one I found, stayed on a little better, a little bit less intrusive without the string there. It also was a little bit more lightweight. So it was, you know, again, kind of less distracting. It wasn't really cutting off my breathing at all for the reading. So I ended up practicing with the clown nose on for a good couple weeks before the reading. The reading itself, it went really well. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn. I think it was one of the better ones of the night, though. I think it did stand out the ways I was hoping that it would. And, you know, definitely there were just no argument about me not making eye contact after that. It made it a little bit more of a performance. So in any event, you know, there's a lot in this story about kind of the identity of characters. So going back to, you know, the story itself, getting away from this reading thing. In a lot of ways, I want this story to be about kind of who people really are versus who they show themselves to be in the world. Clowns always wear makeup, and I made a big point of it in this story that they never saw each other without their makeup on. So these people didn't really know their faces, you know, naked or as they were born with. They only knew the faces as they chose to paint them in front of each other. Similar to that, they didn't know each other's names. So, you know, this character, Shanaran, you know, I make it clear in the story is mostly told from her perspective and point of view, that her real name was Shannon, and she needed in her application to submit what her clown name was going to be, and that's what she was going to be known by once she got to the school. So yeah, just this idea of, you know, we choose the faces that we show the world. We choose the names that we reveal to the world. And then the world, that's what it works with, you know, and then we kind of reveal pieces of ourselves here and there through our actions and through our preferences and, you know, things that we say and do. But, you know, a lot of it's about kind of representation. And I think that's even more true nowadays, you know, in this digital age where, you know, so much of our identity is made up by what we put online, you know, how we shape our Facebook profiles, what we put on Twitter. So anyway, make some statements about all of that. So the ending of this story, you know, I mentioned before, there's kind of that moment of Arabellonia showing up and hinting that she's put some acid in that flower that Shanaran's going to use for her performance. And ultimately, I leave it unknown. I don't kind of put a definitive point on it, whether or not she actually put acid in there. And I think that was the right call. I kind of waffled on that a little bit and at one point had it pretty decisively that she hadn't actually done it. It was all a head game. And I think in many ways that the part of that that's terrifying, the part that makes that an evil act for an evil clown, a villain to do, is the psychological impact of that, is not knowing. It was following through as I originally planned on this act, going to horribly disfigure this person I'm performing with, or am I just being messed with? And what does it say that if I call the bluff and if I do it, if it does turn out to be water, you know, knowing that I put that person at risk and knowing that I've now challenged the person who created this situation, or alternatively kind of kowtowing to them, you know, and choosing, you know, not to spray to change the whole act, which is what Shanaran does in the story, you know, kind of gives Arabellonia that victory in a sense. So in any event, I fell in love with these characters, and I thought that there was definitely more that I could do with them, and more that I could do especially with this circus that Arabellonia had run off to. So I, you know, I was thinking about all of that around the same time. I saw this call for submissions for a speculative fiction contest. And the winner and the top runners up were going to go in this anthology. So, you know, came up on winter break. You know, I defended the thesis. I was done with the program at Hopkins, though I still went back and, you know, took a workshop, you know, later on. But I was, you know, officially speaking, done with that program. You know, I went and traveled up to New York to be with my family for the holidays. But Christmas Eve came around. I had some downtime. So I ended up going to a Panera there. And just sitting down and with my, you know, little netbook, and just started writing. You know, got a cup of coffee, got a cookie, and just sat there and wrote. And you know, it really unfolded in my hands. There are a handful of projects in my lifetime that have been like this, where, you know, particular scenes or even a whole project just kind of come together. And this was really one of those times when, you know, just sitting there and typing the words, I got a real flow going, got a lot of, you know, feelings onto the page. And, you know, by the end of it, I had most of that first chapter, a good, you know, 10 pages at least. And, you know, that was the start of that next part of the project, where I was going from not just this story to, a bigger web of interconnected stories. that very same night. So I went to, at my friend's house. We had a really nice Christmas Eve dinner. I had my kind of de facto nieces there, and got to interact with them, which was always one of my favorite things to do. And I looked at my phone, and I got this email that came in that told me that I was among the finalists for that contest, and that I had not won, but I was shortlisted. And so they were offering me a spot in that anthology, which I did take them up on. In the months to follow, the anthology came out, and it was a pretty cool little collection, I think, called Things You Can Create, still available on sale online. You can get to the link to purchase that, through my website, through miketeachin.com, and click on the fiction link and navigate through to that short story. But in the months to follow after that, though, I finished a full draft of, this collection of short stories that were connected with each other, which, kind of sort of formed a novel. There were some connective tissue between the stories, some overlapping characters, and ultimately a couple threads that kind of went all throughout the book and interwove in between stories to really make it kind of a cohesive piece. So one of the big takeaways I had from this whole project, and particularly from, starting with just Clown Faces, is just this idea of kind of following the heat in writing. I had encountered this clown prom idea, and then I, wrote the Clown Faces original draft, did some revisions, came to this rogue circus idea. And then from there, that's what kind of gave me the leeway to get into this novel and gave me the idea to expand in and explore all these other characters. I don't know what's going to happen with this novel. I do hope it's going to be a project that one day sees the light of day in its entirety. But we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, it was definitely a really good project for me of kind of just exploring my own thought processes and thinking about all these different characters, starting with clowns, going on to the world's tallest man, going on to the fat lady who does sing, to conjoined twins, to a wrestler and his brother, the seamster for the circus, and to all sorts of points in between. It's been a really rewarding project to work on, and one that's really helped me get into a lot of different characters' heads, which, again, even if this project doesn't end up being as successful as I might hope, I think just the lessons I've learned in the process of working on it have been well worth the ride. All right. Well, I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you will check back again. Special thanks, as always, go to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for this show. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity. And I'll catch you next time.